The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we're going to talk about Disney World Superlative. That's coming up on this episode 135 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here for episode 135. I am so happy to have you here and excited to talk about this topic today because I kind of love the idea of being able to kind of go over some of the favorite things or the best things at Disney World. And so today I have 10 superlatives. You may remember superlatives from the yearbook when you were in high school, you know, like most likely to succeed or best dressed or something like that. But we're going to do a version for Disney World. I have kind of a love-hate relationship with superlatives because when I was in high school, I was voted rowdiest girl in our class. And I was very offended by that at the time. I was also voted president of the class. So they must have liked their, you know, leaders to be a little rambunctious. But I was very offended by it, especially because they misspelled it in the yearbook. They spelled it R-O-U-D-I-E-S-T. And it was right next to my name. And it was kind of embarrassing. But in retrospect, probably accurate and occasionally still accurate. So that is my superlative experience. But we're going to do a Disney World version today. Before we dive into that, just a reminder to follow on social media. You pick the platform, search for WDW Prep School and find me there. I also did want to mention that I appreciate the great feedback from the previous episode, which was the first-timer interview that I had done in a long time. About a year ago, I think it was at the end of 2015, I asked for people that wanted to be a first-timer interview, and I got so many submissions. I actually sat down for 4 hours one day, and I wrote them in a spreadsheet because, you know, I have to sort of catalog all the dates and resorts and who's going, all this kind of stuff, because I was going to try to get a variety of people on the podcast. And then I was right in the middle of launching the membership site, and it all felt very overwhelming because the first-timer interviews take a lot more coordination than an episode like this, where it's just me sitting down, making notes and recording. You know, you have to set up a time with somebody before their trip, after, edit it together. There's, you know, it's a whole thing. So I just found it difficult to do at that time because the membership site was launching, but I want to get back into it. So to keep it manageable, I think I'm going to try to do one per month, which, you know, that'll limit me to only having to do it once per month, obviously. But also, it will give you a variety of experiences to listen to. Because, for instance, for the last first-timer report, they went in September. So you got to hear about low crowds, but rain and the Halloween party and that kind of stuff. And every month's going to be a little bit different. So I think that'll be a nice variety. So if you want to be considered for a first-timer interview, you can use the SpeakPipe link, which I will post in the show notes. And SpeakPipe is an app that you can use on your phone or your computer. It's basically like a voicemail system, so I don't have to give out my, you know, personal cell phone number. And you can just leave a message. And I just need some basic information from you so that I can narrow down the right candidates to be on the interview, like your trip dates and where you're staying and who's going. And I'll try to mix it up. I'll try to do a variety of different kinds of things, maybe offsite stays and different types of people in the group, that sort of thing. So if you want to be considered, please leave a message at the SpeakPipe. And if I can interview you and it's a good fit, I will be in contact by email. So that is that. So let's talk about superlative. So I have 10 different categories. I asked for some help on the Facebook page for narrowing down the names of these categories and got a lot of input there. So I've narrowed it down to 10, and then I want to give you kind of my picks in each category. So let's start with the first one, which is best way to beat the heat. Now, I realized recently that I created a graphic as an infographic. That's what I do. And it was called Disney World Attractions to Escape the Rain. And I realized when I was there in June that these are exactly the same attractions that I would suggest for escaping the heat. So it really should be called Escaping the Rain and the Heat, because they're all attractions at Disney World that are indoor, and they are usually pretty easy to get into. Like, they're not going to have long lines. You can actually get into the air conditioning fairly quickly. So I'm going to include that graphic in the show notes because it's a good escape the heat type of option as well. And that includes things like It's a Small World and PhilharMagic at Magic Kingdom or at Hollywood Studios. Muppet Vision 3D is a good one. In the World Showcase at Epcot, there are three movies that you can watch in, or actually more, is there? Yeah, there's three in China, France, and Canada. Those are always good ones. In Animal Kingdom, you have some rides that are inside, or like It's Tough to Be a Bug, that kind of stuff. So some of them actually take quite a while. Anyway, the chart also lists the duration. So if you really want to get out of the rain for like a good 20 or 30 minutes, then there's some options there. However, my favorite thing to beat the heat is actually the shops inside the parks. And in most cases, or in many cases, there's actually an opportunity. They link together. Like, you can get almost like completely down Main Street in Magic Kingdom just by going through the shops, because from the exterior on Main Street, it looks like several shops that you can go in, and they are differently themed and have different products, but they're all connected inside. So it's a great way to, like, if you're getting between point A and point B, you can go through the shops to give yourself some air conditioning and escape from the rain or the heat. And so the shops are actually my favorite way to escape the heat. And you can do that in varying ways in all four parks. So that would be my pick. But I'm also going to include that list of attractions for you. Next category, the second category, is attraction most worthy of a FastPass Plus reservation. Now, this is an interesting one because I think that when people stay off site and you can only make your FastPasses 30 days ahead of time, it's often probably frustrating because you think, oh, they've already got a head start or whatever. But there's actually only a couple of attractions that you have to worry about because they go the fastest. Seven Dwarfs Mine Train at Magic Kingdom is one of them. And the thing about that is it's such a short ride. And if you don't have a fast pass, or you don't ride it first thing in the morning, or manage to get on it late at night, then the queue is quite long. So I think it's, while the queue is fun, it's very well themed, it's probably a frustrating experience to have to wait in a long standby line and then also have a short ride. So Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is definitely one of them. But my top pick for attraction most worthy of a fast pass plus is Frozen Ever After at Epcot. Not only is it the newest attraction in all of Disney World, but it does have the chance to break down the most often. And if you have a FastPass Plus, you can always return when the ride is back up. If you're stuck in the standby line and you get out of it, you're out of luck. You do not get to get back, you know, at that spot again. So FastPass sort of holds your place in a way to be able to return when it is back up. And also, Frozen Ever After, The queue can be quite hot. Like, the part of the queue is inside, but when the line's really long, it goes outside and you're just standing out in it in the middle of the hot Epcot sun. So Frozen Ever After is my top pick for a FastPass Plus. Number three is best character dining experience. And if you have listened to me for more than 2 minutes, you already know the answer to this. And In every category that I'm talking about today, I'm going to give you different possibilities for the answer, except for this one, because to me, Garden Grill is far and away the best character dining experience. To me, Garden Grill is number one and everything else is a distant second place, because all of the other character dining experiences are sort of similar. They're mostly buffets and the characters come around and you would take turns seeing them, and they're very similar in their pros and cons. Garden Grill is on a different level, and that's because you get great character interaction, the food is brought to you, and the food is good. I think it might be the best food at a character dining experience. It's also not nearly as difficult to get a reservation at Garden Grill as it is at some of the other places. And so to me, overall, no contest, best character dining experience is Garden Grill at Epcot. Number four, attraction most likely to soak you. There are a few rides that you could get wet on at Disney World. First of all, the one that most people think of is Splash Mountain. And you definitely, if you ride Splash Mountain at Magic Kingdom, can get really soaked if you sit at the front or if your boat happens to get stuck or, you know, you have to wait in the line, so to speak, while you're next to like a water fountain. There's lots of water features on Splash Mountain. And if you just happen to be stuck there for a little while, then you're going to get that on you. So that's definitely a contender for this. Pirates of the Caribbean sometimes gets people wet, especially when it doesn't work correctly. We had a time when the boat almost felt like it was tipping over, and I actually stopped at the end and said to the cast member, "Do you realize that we were almost in the water?" I think that they have started to resolve some of those issues, but it for people that have been going to Disney World for decades, they said that Pirates at one time recently was getting them more soaked than anything else. And so hopefully that's been tweaked and isn't as likely. But sitting in the front on that one again is where you're more likely to get wet. But hopefully, you know, when things are working well, nobody will get very wet. But the number one way to get completely soaked at Disney World is by riding Cali River Rapids at Animal Kingdom. Cali River Rapids is a river raft ride. You know, you sit in a circle and you go down a river, and the amount that you get wet will really vary, but your chances of getting completely soaked are pretty high. This is one where you might consider wearing a poncho because you'll be soaked the rest of the day. There's a good chance you will be soaked the rest of the day. They used to have a thing in the middle of those rafts where you could store your bags under like a plastic flap so that you could protect them. But now they don't have that. They do have free lockers at Cali River Rapids. So everything that you don't want to take on, you need to put in the lockers beforehand, which, you know, it was a little frustrating for us. We got stuck in a line there for a while and didn't have our phones or a fan, or, you know, we couldn't do anything really because everything was in the locker, but it does keep it from getting completely soaked. So definitely Cali River Rapids is the most likely to get you wet at Disney World. Next up is most likely to make you cry. And if you're me, everything at Disney World could be in this category. I cry so easily when I'm in Disney parks because I think everything is sort of sweet and overwhelming and all that kind of stuff. But there are a few contenders. First of all, are shows where there's kid participation. I think that in general is a category, and maybe that's just because I don't have little kids anymore. So when I am around a bunch of other little kids, it's just extra sweet to me. But I assume that people with little kids probably feel this way too. This includes things like Frozen Sing-Along, because when you're at the Frozen Sing-Along and everybody chimes in because everybody knows the words, it's very sweet to me. Enchanted Tales with Belle is another possibility because it's a participation show where they get the kids to volunteer to be roles in the show, and it's just very sweet. I don't know. So, and just in general, shows that have participation and they provide a lot of sweet moments. Another option in this category is Festival of the Lion King. I don't know if this is just me. It's my favorite show at Disney World. I don't know if it's just me that cries, but I just get overwhelmed by the music is great and everybody's into it. It's such a good show and the performers are, you know, swinging through the air. And I don't know. It's just so joyous to me. I love it so much. And I cry every single time. And I've seen that show so many times, but still love it. Another strong possibility is Wishes, the fireworks show at Magic Kingdom, which is I still cry at that one quite a bit too. It's just super sweet and there's narration and music and fireworks and it's lovely. But my number one pick for most likely to make you cry is actually Celebrate the Magic at Magic Kingdom. Now, this is the projection show that takes place on the castle before the fireworks, and it's just so well done. And anything that has the voice of Walt included is like pushing a cry button on me. And that show has it. Celebrate the Magic does. And so I just, you know, if you didn't plan on seeing the projections on the castle, I would definitely consider, you know, incorporating that into your trip. When I was there for an entire month in June, I wanted to end on a happy note and on, you know, one of my favorite things. And I did Celebrate the Magic, and I actually did Facebook Live so I could share that with everybody. And that, because it's my favorite show at Disney World. For Disneyland, they had Disneyland Forever fireworks, which included, this is for the 60th anniversary, so they're gone now, but they had projections with fireworks, and that made me cry more than anything in the whole world. Then they have World of Color over at California Adventure, which is, you know, still there. And just, that's another one. Like, it just, these nighttime shows, they know how to, Disney knows how to make us cry. So Celebrate the Magic at Disney World is my top pick. Next up is best use of a snack credit on the Disney Dining Plan. And this was requested when I posted it on Facebook. I thought it was a really good one. We have a post on the site about maximizing dining plan credits, but we only talk about table service and quick service because there are just so many snacks to keep track of that it would be nearly impossible to do. So we tend to focus on table service and quick service. However, the general idea is if an item is snack credit eligible and it costs more than $5, then that's a good deal because roughly speaking, that is the value of a snack credit. There are a few opportunities. I mean, there's probably lots of opportunities, but there's a few opportunities to exceed that value at Disney World that I wanted to mention. One is Starbucks drinks, and every park has a Starbucks in it now, and you can use snack credits to get a Starbucks drink. And as it was mentioned in the tips episode where lots of people called in tips, and it was one of my favorite tips overall, if you add flavors to your drink, it still counts as just a snack credit. But if you were paying cash, each one of those flavors that you add would cost you money. So it's possible, I haven't done the math on this, but I think it's possible that if you get a drink and add flavors, it would be worth up to $9 or something like that. But you can use a snack credit for that. So that's obviously a really good value. But, you know, if you happen to like drinks with lots of flavors, then you might as well use your snack credit for that. Another option is Dole Whip floats. And Dole Whips can be found at the Polynesian and in Adventureland section of Magic Kingdom. The Dole Whips themselves aren't quite as good a value, though they're a very popular treat. It's pineapple ice cream. But if you get it as a float, then that it really becomes a good value. Another good option for a snack credit is cupcakes. My favorite place to get cupcakes is Hollywood Studios. They always seem to have the best specialty cupcakes, especially Starring Rolls Cafe. And believe it or not, those cupcakes are often $5 plus. So if you have a snack credit, then you can use it on one of those amazing cupcakes. But my favorite use of a snack credit is during the Food and Wine Festival at Epcot. And that's because there are so many kiosks that have snack credits that exceed $5. In fact, this year, there are a few that exceed $7, which is incredible. Disney Food Blog has food and wine menus, and they've noted which ones are Disney Dining Plan snack credit eligible. And so I'll include a link to that in the show notes. But here's just a sampling that I found when I was looking. There is a filet mignon. I assume it's a small portion of filet mignon in Canada at a kiosk, which would cost you $7.75. There's a lamb chop at the Australia booth that would be $7.25. And at the hops and barley booth in the American Pavilion, there is a $7.75 lobster roll. So those are really great options for snack credit because that is, you know, obviously way over $5. So Food and Wine Festival snack credits would be my top pick for the best use of a snack credit. Next up is most likely to make you laugh. And there's probably a lot of things that could go in this category. I just kind of noted the first things that popped in my mind, but if you have some additional ones, I would love to hear them. First of all, Monsters, Inc. Laugh Floor. It's in the name, you know, Laugh Floor, that's the whole point of it. They tell jokes, they interact with the audience. There's often a lot of moments of awkwardness because they're randomly picking people from the audience, so it's improv. And so that's always a good one that the whole family seems to like. Another one is the Citizens of Hollywood, and they are street performers at Hollywood Studios, and they do entire like bits and setups right in the streets of Hollywood Studios, and they're super entertaining. And if you have time to just sit and watch them, then that is a good one. I admit in the past I have been so focused on getting between point A and B that I haven't sort of stopped and taken the time to enjoy them, but I am starting to do that more and more, and I really like them. Another option, this is sort of a dark horse in this category, but I put it in because it's something I always notice, and that is Star Tours, the ride at Hollywood Studios. It's not a funny ride, but every single time I'm on it, a lot of, I guess it can be a funny ride, but every time I'm on it, people are giggling so much. And it's mostly first timers who didn't know what to expect. So they're kind of just tickled by it all, I think. And if you're not familiar with Star Tours, there are lots of variations of Star Tours, dozens of possibilities and sequences that you could get when you ride it. Some are a little bit more funny than others. And so I just always notice first timers being completely tickled by that. And it makes me laugh. First timers are my favorite thing about going to Disney World. So I just threw that in here because to me, the thing that seems to always happen when I am on that ride. But my top pick for most likely to make you laugh Disney World is the Frozen Sing-Along, because it is hosted by historians. Usually it's a man and a woman, and they are really funny. They're the stars of the show, not really Anna and Elsa, but it's the historians who narrate the whole thing. And there's a lot of like pop culture references, and they just play off each other really well. And I think the adults get a big kick out of them, especially, or kids who can get the references. But they're just so funny, and they're always a little bit different every time I go. But the historians at the Frozen Sing-Along are my top pick for most likely to make you laugh. Next up is the best smell at Disney World. I think this one could have a lot of possibilities, and I jotted down the first three that popped in my head. This is another one that if you have some other ideas to add to the list, please, please do, because they're just too many for me to sit and brainstorm and remember. But one of mine is the Beach Club. You just walk in the Beach Club Resort, and to me, instant love. Like, it just smells good, so much so that I have looked for candles and different things that could emulate that smell. It just smells good. And I think I know of somebody who actually got that smell, or that like system installed in their house so that their house could smell just like it. But it's a good one. Another one, and this is a little bit polarizing because I think some people hate it. I love it. It's the Shops in Norway, which have perfume. It's Layla perfume. I actually own it. I wear it at home. And the whole shop just smells like it. And I happen to really like it. And our whole family likes it. And three of the four of us have products from there. So I really like it. But if you find perfumey smells overwhelming, then that would be a good one for you to avoid. But it's one of my favorites. But my top pick for overall best smell Disney World is actually the Caramel Shop in Germany. And you may have heard me mention this when I talked about the highlights of the World Showcase, but the Caramel Shop in Germany, it's just the best. You can smell it as you're walking towards Germany. And for me, it's impossible to not go in. Even if I don't buy anything, I just have to go in and look at everything. I already know what's on the menu. I already know what they sell, but I just have to take it all in. It's the best. I love the Caramel Shop in Germany. Next category is most likely to break down. This is kind of a sad one, but a good chance to talk about rides that break down. So there are several rides that break down on the regular. One of those is Pirates of the Caribbean at Magic Kingdom. Another is really all the mountains at Magic Kingdom. So Space Mountain, Splash Mountain, Big Thunder Mountain, especially Splash and Space. They seem to break down the most. And then Haunted Mansion. So that I've named now five different things at Magic Kingdom that break down a lot. And when I was making this list, it just sort of reiterated, if I could just go off on a tangent for a second, it reiterated the difficulty of Magic Kingdom. And I think Magic Kingdom overall, it's the busiest park of the four. It's the hardest to get to if you are driving, because you have to park and then, you know, get over there on a monorail or on a ferry. And it's also the park with the rides most likely to break down. So if you find yourself frustrated at Magic Kingdom, just know that you're not alone. There are a lot of factors that play into that, including rides breaking down. And that's super frustrating. This is where having the My Disney Experience app helps, so that you can, if you're, you know, across the park, you can open it and see if the ride is reopened, and then you can go back and ride it. It's also a good opportunity to use a fast pass. If you, like, for instance, Space Mountain breaks down a lot. So that's a good one to get a fast pass for, because if it is broken down, you can always come back. They'll let you redeem it later on. But my top pick for most likely to break down is Frozen Ever After at Epcot. It is It's getting better, but the animatronics have been difficult for cast members, I think. And so they do often have to close the ride to fix things. And so the ride does tend to break down. Add to that the fact that the lines are already long. And it's just a frustrating experience. So it's most likely to break down. Also, the best use of a fast pass, if you remember from earlier. So Frozen Ever After is my pick, but hopefully it'll improve to the point that it will drop off this list. Final category today is best overall resort. And when this category was suggested, I thought, oh, I've got just the thing for this. So data and analysis is sort of my thing. I love the organization of data and I love to quantify things. A few months ago, I created a spreadsheet and I ranked all of the Disney World resorts in the categories of theming, food, and transportation, and then add them all up. And I just wanted to see where everything sort of sorted out when I sorted the list from highest to lowest. And of course, this is in my opinion, and it's very subjective, but that's why you're here, to hear my opinion, I assume. So when I ranked in all the categories and sorted, the one that floated to the very top was the Polynesian. And the reason is that it is very well themed, the on-site food options are fantastic, and the transportation options are great because you have the ability to take the monorail over to Magic Kingdom. You can walk to the monorail station that takes you to Epcot. I love that flexibility to do that. So the Polynesian floated to the top of the list. I'm going to give you a few others that kind of occurred after the Polynesian. Second was Art of Animation. You may have thought it would be all deluxe resorts, but nope, it's Art of Animation. And partially that's because I love it so much. So of course I ranked it a little bit higher. Now its weakness is food because it has just a food court, which is nicer than the other value resorts, but gets mixed reviews from people. But the transportation is all buses, but direct buses, doesn't have to share with any other Disney World resort. And the theming really cannot be beaten, in my opinion. It is fantastic. For families with young kids, it is my top pick, I think. And then I have the Grand Floridian, which has some of the best restaurants in all of Disney World. And transportation, you're just one monorail stop away from Magic Kingdom. Then on the list, I have the Contemporary, which has okay theming. I think the theming is probably its weak spot, but it has fantastic on-site food. Even though I'm getting ready to stay there for the first time this week, but I visit there every single time because I love the food so much. Transportation is a great thing there because you can walk to Magic Kingdom, and you just mentioned me, you know, talk about the difficulty of Magic Kingdom. So the ability to walk there is a huge, huge perk. And the last one I'm going to mention that was in my top five here was Animal Kingdom Lodge. And that's because the theming, to me, it's 10 out of 10, the food 10 out of 10. And its weakness is transportation because the buses, you know, can be hit or miss, can take a while, that sort of thing. But the theming and food are so fantastic there. So I hope that helps you. And so, you know, my overall pick in this is the Polynesian. So it was interesting when I sorted it because the Beach Club is what I always say is my favorite resort, and it is. But as I sorted and based on different categories, Polynesian is the one that floated to the top of the list. So I want to mention a quick tip of the day before we wrap up this episode. And this quick tip comes from Aaron, who emailed this as a response to the last episode where the person I was interviewing mentioned that her daughter got scared on Haunted Mansion. So this is the tip that was submitted by Aaron. It says, you can completely skip the scary portion of Haunted Mansion and bypass the stretching room and creepy parts and walk straight onto the ride. Just let a cast member know as you walk from the outside of the queue into the mansion, and they will escort you through some hallways and straight to the ride. You get ahead of all the people that are going into the stretching room, and your child avoids the scariest part. We've done it every time with my 4-year-old, and he loves it. So that is fantastic. I never knew that that was an option. But I love that it is, because I really do think if kids can get past that very initial beginning of the attraction where you're in a room and they try to scare you, that the actual ride is not so scary. So go ahead and try that if you are afraid of your child being scared of Haunted Mansion. I think that's going to wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. I just finished packing for a trip. I'm getting ready to leave and go on my first cruise. It's going to be a few days at the Contemporary and then a few days on the Disney Dream. And the next podcast is going to be a trip report of that trip. So I can't wait to tell you all about it. For more information on this show, you can look in the show notes for some of the information that I have talked about, or go to the website, click on podcast at the top, and then you can look for episode 135. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.